Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
He's a Hall of Famer,
Tom.
An Atlanta legend, and again this season, he's only on one station.
And there it is, career strikeout number 1,000.
Struck him out, 7 strikeouts through 5.
And that's 300 wins for Tom Glavin.
It's the Tom Glavin Show,
Tommy.
Presented by attorney Ken Nugent. One call, that's all.
The Hall of Famer, Tommy Glavin, joins Chuck and Chernoff on The Fan. Mr. Glavin, we appreciate it as always. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys? You're on a field trip today, huh?
We are. We're up here at Sugarloaf, which I'm sure you know your way around this course. So,
A little bit, yes.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I want to ask you about veteran pitchers, because it's just a different world. Like, just from getting yourself going every fifth day to, as you've talked about, and I love the way you describe it, you're like, I know when my stuff is good going in. I know when I don't have it. Doesn't always mean it's going to work out that way on the mound. But watching Charlie Morton this weekend and Chris Sale both really pitch well. One went 7 innings, the other went 6. Like, that's still going to mean something to you to watch these guys. Charlie's 40. Chris Sale's like 30, whatever he is, 35, off a ton of injuries. To see those veterans still perform has got to be, for a guy like you, right? You enjoy seeing that play out.
No, absolutely, I do. I love it. You know, again, obviously in Charlie's case, I've gotten to see him a lot more. But Charlie, you know, he doesn't seem to have any drop-off. You know, it's like I remember hearing talk last year towards the end of the year with him about whether or not he was going to play again this year. And you know, unless his desire wasn't there, my thought was, well, why wouldn't you? Your stuff is still filthy, you know, and there's still plenty there, you know, and it's almost like he keeps getting better and better every year because I think he learns more and more how to use that breaking ball even more and how to make it more of a weapon and mix in the fastball. So, I mean, he's been, you know, he's been Mr. Consistency, obviously, for the team. I mean, he's the epitome of the guy that takes the ball every fifth day and goes out there. So, you know, particularly at his age, that's a huge asset. And then for Chris, you know, Chris, I've probably seen Chris pitch more with the Red Sox than I have so far at the Braves. I've watched a little bit of it, but, you know, he's a guy that when he's on, you know, I mean, he's just really tough. There's a lot of moving parts that go along with some nasty stuff. You know, the biggest concern with him, right, is you hold your breath a little bit long-term, hoping that he stays healthy, which has been obviously a little bit of an issue for him the last few years. But, you know, you talk about two veteran guys with veteran presence that leaders in the clubhouse and are both really good and do it from opposite sides. You know, what a huge luxury for the Braves.
Tom Glavin Show is currently going on right here on the Chuck and Chernoff Show. And Tom, I want to take you over to tonight's starter, Bryce Elder, a all-star during the first half of last season. Then the league kind of made their adjustments off of him. And for a guy who's not a big power guy, you know, a lot of it has to do with location and changing speeds. What do you think the big adjustment that the league made to him last year that made him turn in from an all-star to a guy that was just kind of middle of the road as of the end of last year?
You know, I would have to say that, you know, it's probably similar to a lot of the things I went through and maybe even Greg went through. You know, when you're a sinker changeup kind of guy, It takes the league a while to see what your pitches are, what the action is, to recognize the ones that, you know, stay in the strike zone versus the ones that finish out of the strike zone. So, you know, I think the big thing is you tend to get a little bit less chase, and that becomes an issue, right? And I think you know, a lot of times you feel like, okay, maybe I need to throw that pitch a little bit more precisely or a little bit more perfectly, or try to guide it a little bit to try to get it where I want. And that's not necessarily the case. I think sometimes, I know in my case, you know, I went through adjustments where if guys were on my changeup, well, you know, I probably needed to pitch inside a little bit more and get them off that changeup. Not that the changeup had to be better, but I had to do something to get them off it. So I think those are some of the things that Bryce is going to have to do. I mean, he's going to have to – obviously, he's got to stay out of the middle of the plate. I don't care if you throw 88 or 98. The middle of the plate is a bad area to be. So, you know, when you don't have velocity necessarily to get away with that stuff, stay out of the middle, which Bryce did really well the beginning part of last year, struggled with the latter part of the year. But, you know, I think for him – pitch inside a little bit more. Make guys a little bit more conscious in, and don't let them get as good a look at that stuff away.
Glav, I want to tug at your heartstrings. I want to see if we can get you emotional here. And it's not really about pitching. Uh-oh. Yeah, I know.
It's about Chuck.
Yeah. So Matt Ryan officially announced his retirement today, put out a very cool 3.5-minute video. A lot of it was dedicated to his teammates in the organization, but a lot of it was dedicated to the fans and what Atlanta meant. And I think the story is not too different than yours. I mean, you had no Atlanta in you before you got here. Neither did Matt. Matt was from Philly, played at Boston College. Glav's a Northeast guy from, you know, Massachusetts. But you then not only played most of your career here, you came back here for a lot of your post-career and still did stuff, games, and at least part-time made it your home. So what did Atlanta mean to you, the way I'm watching Matt talk about what the city meant to him?
You know, it's home. You know, I mean, look, I grew up in Boston, obviously, and you know, any time I go back to my parents' house, obviously I'm going home. I mean, that's where I grew up, and I think that's, you know, where you know, you tend to call home for the most part. But I think for me, Atlanta became home as well. It certainly became my second home. I mean, my kids all grew up there. They all went to school there. It's still, you know, it's home for them. So, you know, it's a city that, yeah, I had absolutely no ties to. I had not much of an idea about before I got there, but you know, for me, it was fun. It was a ton of fun being a part of, you know, watching the city grow, watching baseball, the culture of baseball grow, and being a part of all that. You know, and it's still near and dear to me. I still love going back there, even though I don't live there full time anymore. I still love going back there and, you know, still love all the friends and the people that I've made friendships with and whatnot. So, I mean, it's a very, very special place. And I think for me, again, I think the ultimate compliment is it became my second home. I mean, home is where I grew up, but Atlanta became my second home, and I think that says a lot.
Well, I want to talk about something you just said there, because I think the timing is really important, right? That you experienced a year that when we talk to younger people about 1991 now, it just sounds like mom and dad are preaching about this mythical year where a city went from not showing up at a ballpark to, as Dale Murphy said to me the other day, because he was gone the next year, people have tomahawks on their windshield wipers and you know, they're wrapped up in every Braves kind of gear possible, and it overtook the city. Like, that's a big part of your story, right? The turnaround and being a part of that sort of, you know, changeover from the Braves of the 80s to the 90s.
100%, you know, and I tell people, too, when we talk about it, people forget, you know, during that time, I had just become a player rep. And during that time, you know, the collective bargaining agreement process, part of the talks were about contraction. And Atlanta was one of the teams that was on the list for contraction, you know. So it wasn't like we were, you know, this hotbed of baseball or this franchise that everybody wanted to copy. It was a situation where we were, you know, baseball was trying to figure out where Atlanta fit in. And then all of a sudden, you know, 1991 happens and you know, it goes from hardly anybody in the ballpark, you know, to Ted Turner telling everybody to come sit in the lower bowl so it looks like there's people there on TV, to now you couldn't get a seat, you know, and I say it all the time, you'd be driving down the highway 75 going, you know, 70 miles an hour and people are honking at you and doing the tomahawk chop. I mean, I was a part of that whole process that grew that city in its love affair with baseball. So you talk about something that was really cool to be a part of. That was it. And to see where it is now, you know, the model franchise, the franchise that, you know, so many people are trying to emulate in so many different ways. It was really neat for me and something that I'm really proud of. I've been a part of it.
Tom, I've tried to kind of find a description for my kids as they've gotten into sports and trying to describe, you know, where the Braves are now versus where they were then. And I've tried to say, hey, you see what's going on in Oakland? You see how this was empty? You see how nobody shows up? And now imagine suddenly within 2 years, it's the ticket you have to get, and they're all over Sports Illustrated and everything else. That's an extreme story of how this thing turned around and as quickly as it did for you guys.
It is, but it isn't, right? Because it happened. I mean, you're right. You look at what's going on in Oakland, and, you know, that's where we were, right? I mean, not necessarily to the point that Oakland's at, obviously, now where they're you know, going to go somewhere else. But, you know, it was similar in that there weren't a lot of people at the ballpark. You know, the Braves maybe had a little bit more success in and out, so to speak. You know, I mean, the Braves had a good team in 82 and in some of those other years, but obviously mid, late 80s, early 90s, you know, people weren't clamoring for a Braves ticket. I mean, you couldn't give them away, you know, and then to go from that to where it is, you know, yeah, you could turn on any TV right now and pick a team, you know, Oakland or whoever, and watch a game and see nobody in the stands and say, yeah, that's what it used to be every single night. And I'm sure, you know, people have a hard time believing it, but, you know, I think those, when I think back about all those years and the success that we had, and obviously the great part of the city growing, like, it blows my mind when I think about there were kids that started kindergarten when we started our run, and their whole lifetime through school, we were in the playoffs every year.
Yep.
I mean, that's just
that's silly.
That blows my mind when I think about that.
Yeah, that's silly. Last one for you, Glav. I said I talked to Murph the other day, and I can't hear the story enough. And he told it from his perspective again of you having to, you know, you were ordered to do the code red. You were going to have to hit Glav. But he had told some other elements of that story that I had not heard. And again, it was fascinating on his part because he said he heard from Bobby later that we're hitting whoever's up. And then, was it you? He says, Glav goes to Bobby, goes, it's Murph. And Bobby Cox goes, I don't care that it's Murph. Yeah. Bobby was going to follow the rules of baseball no matter what. And you were tasked with going to hit him. So, did you ever really think you were going to hit him? Or how fast do you think you threw those four pitches that moved him off the plate?
I mean, not fast. I mean, look, it's one of those things that I wish I had over. I really do. I mean, I should have just hit him on the first pitch. But,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I did. Bobby came down because, you know, it happened on Sunday. And we thought if anything was going to happen, it was going to happen on Friday. And when nothing happened and then it happened on Sunday, it's like, what the hell, right? And I remember I talked to Rod. You know, ironically, Roger was my last pitching coach in Atlanta, and I said to him, you're the reason I got thrown out of the only game I got thrown out of. And he said, you know, what happened was he told Wally Ritchie, who Otis charged, that if nothing happened before he got in the game, whenever that was, he would get Otis. Well, he didn't get in until the eighth inning on Sunday. So, you know, he fulfilled his promise, so to speak. But, yeah, Bobby, as soon as it happened, I saw Bobby walking towards me. And he's like, Glav, we got to hit the first guy. And I did. I said, Bobby, it's Murph. Let me hit the second guy. It was Charlie Hayes. I said, let me hit Charlie. He goes, no, you got to hit Murph.
Isn't that so, more dangerous to hit Charlie Hayes?
Well, I wouldn't have had as hard a time, you know. I could have probably would have been one and done. It might have caused more of a problem in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, I think after I threw that first one at Murph, he looked at me like, did you just, you know? And then, you know, when you watch the video on YouTube, like every subsequent pitch after that, he was barely in the batter's box once I let go of the ball. So he knew it was coming. So I got a lot of hate mail for hitting Dale Murphy, and I was like, well, I never hit him.
Never
so
really
what,
hit him.
What's your problem?
So I thought the tag was funny that Murph told it. I didn't know that the Braves said, we're going to get Roger McDowell for this. And everybody's like, how are you going to get McDowell? He's a reliever. He's never going to hit. McDowell went to the Dodgers the next year, Murph says, and you guys got him in a late game situation because the Dodgers ran out of everyday players. So McDowell came up and he got hit. So, and I guess as Murph told it, him and Kruk were in the Phillies clubhouse. Kruk was just doubled over laughing that they got McDowell.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a year later or even 2 years later, but we did. It was in L.A. He came in and had to hit. And I think it was Marvin Freeman that had to hit him. So, yeah. Old school baseball. That
I love
happen
it.
Anymore.
That's so good. Glav, it's always a pleasure. We always appreciate the insight. We'll do it again next week.
All right. Have a great week, guys.
There's the Hall of Famer, Tom Glavin, with Chuck and Chernoff.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
This morning in North Carolina, wheels are spinning. Determination is winning. A passion is now a thriving business, and it shows no signs of slowing down. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one Clint Spiegel had with First Horizon Bank about starting a bike wheel manufacturing facility in Asheville. Now it's not just talk, it's rubber meets road. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Clint. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.